Welcome to the Betting Above the Rim podcast. Today's date, June 14th, episode 61. In today's podcast, we get into four topics. Number one, after Dan Hurley says no to the Lakers, I take a look at which job is more attractive for a coach, Cleveland or the Lakers. Next, we look at the icon and talk about the career, not just the playing career, but the executive career of the logo, Mr. Clutch, Jerry West. Next, we go to the W, where the Aces won a game last night by three on the road, but they're not playing well. I'll talk to you about what is wrong with the defending WNBA champs. And lastly, we'll go to the NBA draft. There has been movement, although slow, in the direction of who is going to be the number one pick. I will give you my reasons why the guy that's making the move is going to be the guy that gets the number, is going to be the overall number one pick. And let's get started with the NBA. Obviously, the big news of the week earlier on Monday, and we talked about it on last podcast, was Dan Hurley saying no to the Lakers. And it brings up an interesting take. When you look at the Los Angeles Lakers and you look at Cleveland, which job is better suited for a new head coach? You look at this past year, the Cavaliers, 48-34, lost in the Eastern Conference semifinals to the Celtics. Remember, folks, obviously, last two games, Donovan Mitchell did not play. Jared Allen didn't play the entire series. And Caris LeVert did not play game five versus the Los Angeles Lakers team that had a 47-35 record, lost in the first round of the playoffs to the Denver Nuggets. Remember, they won the play-in game to go against Denver, and they lost in five games. So when you look at it, I think a main thing to look at is first, let's line up the stars and what is going on in Cleveland, right? You have a Cleveland Cavs team that people believe either Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland will be traded in offseason. Now, I know there's been a little bit of pullback on Garland, but you tend to think one of them is going to be moved, right? And a lot of it's going to depend on what Donovan Mitchell does this summer. If he extends, then you probably look at more likely Garland getting moved. If he declines an extension, then maybe Spider gets moved, Garland stays. But it's deeper than that. You have to go look at the forward slash center position. But do they keep Evan Mobley or Jared Allen? Something I've talked about a lot on this network is who stays and who goes, because I don't think you can keep both of them. And then you have to look at, you know, some of the, like, ancillary pieces. The Caris LeVerts, George Niang just got there. Max Strus just got there. So what is the path for them to get better? Now, when you go to the flip side in the Lakers, simply put, what does LeBron do? Does LeBron stay or LeBron want to go? LeBron has an option to opt out and make more money. There's a thought of Bronny James. What are we going to do about Bronny? Is he going to want to get drafted? There's the AD conversation. And Anthony Davis, that when he's playing, is one of the 10 and playing the way he can play offensively and defensively. It's one of the 10 best players in the world. You look at a guy like a D'Angelo Russell, you know, who could be a free agent as a player option, which he probably will exercise. Look at a guy like a Torian Prince, right, who could be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. Jared Vanderbilt, hurt a lot during the year. Gabe Vincent hasn't been what they thought they was. Cam Reddish got brought in, got relegated to the bench. A guy like Austin Reeves, can he continue to take the next step? Now, when you get into draft picks, what each team has, Cleveland, you know, over the next, I guess I would say, seven drafts, have nine picks, right? You look at the Lakers. These are first and second round picks. Over the next 7 years, they have 11 picks. So this is where it gets difficult. What is the better job? Simply put, it's Cleveland. And this is not a slight to LeBron James at all. But LeBron James is 39 years old. He still plays at an incredibly high level. Let's be generous. LeBron's got 2 years. Generous. And I'm not saying 2 years in which he's a top 10 player in the league. Still probably a top 10 now. Will he be there a year from now at the age of 40? The one thing I can always tell you is Father Time is undefeated. And at some point, he's going to catch up to LeBron. So now that means you got to lean on Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis, that is, like I said, when engaged, one of the best basketball players on planet Earth. But when you're looking deeper into AD, the concerns are going to be, well, JY, what about his injury history? And Anthony Davis this year averaged 24.7 points per game, 15th in the NBA, right? 12.6 rebounds, third in the NBA, right? A player that over his illustrious career is averaging 24.1 points, 10.6 rebounds, 2.3 blocks. Played 76 games this year. It's big for AD. But 22-23, played 54. 21-20, 21-22, played 40. I know we had shortened years. 19-20, only 62, shortened year. 40 and 21-22. This past year was the first year that Anthony Davis has played at least 75 games since 2017-2018. So you have an Anthony Davis that's going to be that is 31, that will turn 32 in March. So look at that. And then go to the flip side and look at Cleveland. A Cleveland Cavaliers team. Let's say they keep Spider. Age 27. You look at his statistics over his career, right? Only 55 games this past year. 68, 67, 53, 69, 77, 79. A little bit more available than Anthony Davis. Career scoring of 24.8 points per game. 4.3 rebounds, 4.6 assists. Career high in assists this past year at 6.1. But then you have to dig deeper, right? Mobley or Allen? Let's say you keep Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley, age 22. It's a key. He's young. And if you look at both teams, if they keep Evan Mobley, Evan Mobley has more upside than anybody on either roster. Now, can Evan Mobley ever be an Anthony Davis? I'm not saying that. But I can see a guy that was 15.7, 9.4, 3.2 assists per game this past year. His averages 1.5 blocks in his career. And like I said, age 22 is 9 years younger than Anthony Davis. The upside is there. Now, the problem with Evan Mobley is he only played 50 games this year. So when you line things up, it's Cleveland because of the Evan Mobley, because he has the biggest upside. But it's also the fact that you're in the East. The West, with Oklahoma City, with Minnesota, with Denver, with Dallas, with New Orleans, are going to take the next step. If Memphis can get their act together, I think Houston's going to be much improved. What happens with Wemby in San Antonio? It's harder to make headway in the West, even talk about Sacramento, than in the East, where you have Boston. But you have a lot of bad teams. Washington. Charlotte. Atlanta could be rebuilding. Detroit. Chicago should be on a rebuild. The Nets should not be good next year. See where I'm going? So when you line up the overall future, take LeBron James out of it because you only got him for 1 to 2 years. You're talking about the next 5 years. Which job is better between the Lakers and the Cavs? I would take Cleveland over the Lakers. Speaking of the Lakers, we lost an icon earlier this week. Jerry West, the logo, Mr. Clutch, we lost. And I want people to think about this. In his playing career, Hall of Famer, 1972 NBA champion, 14-time All-Star, 12-time All-NBA, 68-69 Finals MVP. Note, folks, the only time the Finals MVP was given to a player on the losing team. 5-time All-Defensive Team, 1969-70 scoring champion, 75th anniversary team, 14-year career with the Lakers. And when you think about the fact that he only won one ring in 72, you have to realize that he had to go through the Celtics. The Red Auerbach, Bob Cousy, Bill Russell, Celtics. The greatest dynasty in the history of the NBA. Think about that for a second. In 70, they lose to the Knicks in a Game 7 at MSG. Willis Reed game. Really should be called the Clyde Frazier game. Because as great Jerry West was that series, Walt Clyde Frazier completely outplayed him in Game 7 with a 36-point, 19-assist performance. What about 71? Well, there was a guy named Lew Alcindor who just came into the league. Got a championship for Oscar Robertson and the Milwaukee Bucks. Finally, in 1972, they beat the Knicks 4-1 and win his only NBA championship. But his career doesn't stop there, folks. I want you to think about this. He becomes an executive coach of the Lakers for 3 years, then moves up to the front office role from 1980 to 2000. I want you to think about some of the iconic players that he was responsible for. Drafting Magic Johnson in 1980. Drafting James Worthy, I do believe, in 1982. Getting guys like A.C. Green, Byron Scott, right? Towards the end of Kareem's career. Brings in a guy named Vlade Divac from Europe. Eventually trades Vlade Divac in a draft for a guy named Kobe Bryant. And signs Shaquille O'Neal from the Orlando Magic. From that time frame of 2000, I'm going to do this off the top of my head, folks. 1980 NBA championship, 1982 NBA championship, 1985 NBA championship, 1987-88 NBA championship, and championship in 2000 with the Lakers. He leaves the Lakers, goes to Memphis. Memphis gets a guy named Paul Gasol. Trades for a guy named White Chocolate, Jason Williams. Gets a player, really good role player, named James Posey. And decides, after not coaching in the NBA since, I believe, 1986 or 85, takes Hubie Brown out of the broadcast booth and puts him on the sidelines of the Memphis Grizzlies. And everybody talks about the run they had a couple of years ago, the whoop that trick. Look how good that team was with Jerry West as the architect. A team that Hubie Brown, who I just talked about, ended up winning NBA Coach of the Year in 2004. So then he leaves for a couple of years after 2007. Then he goes to Golden State as an advisor, board member. Helps Joe Lacob and Peter Gruber with his team, right? was also instrumental in the fact of bringing in Steve Kerr, telling him not to trade Klay Thompson. What happens? They win a championship in 2015. Then he won it again in 16-17. Then he leaves for there and goes to the Clippers. In which the Clippers, the Lakers, which he wanted to go back to, decided they didn't want to handle reins over to Rob Pelinka. So he became a consultant. And what did he do? He helped bring in Kawhi Leonard. Trade for Paul George. So as great as that career, if we could, Matt, if we could pull up those his career accolades again for people to see it, I'm not going to read them off again. Jerry West, between his time as a player and as an executive, spans in the NBA from 1960 to 2024. 65 years. I will say this. It's not the best player of all time. Could be one of the greatest executives of all time. But you can't have a history of the NBA and not put Jerry West in the first chapter, let alone page one or page two. His accolades as a player, as an executive, stands up to almost anyone in the sport. We lost an icon. We lost a legend. We lost one of the faces of the NBA. Rest in peace to the great Jerry West. Let's move on to the WNBA, where the defending WNBA champions, not playing so hot. I know they won last night. But the Vegas Aces record stands at 6-5 right now. And you're saying to yourself, well, JY, 6-5. It's not a bad record. 6-5, right? Well, I've already told you that the Vegas Aces lost 6 games all of last year where they steamrolled themselves to a WNBA title. When they lost their 5th game last year, it was with 5 games left to play. They were 30-5. So when you look at it, pull up these stats here, and you're like, what's wrong with this team right now with Vegas? Look at Asia Wilson, scoring at 28.3 points per game, 11.4 rebounds, 1.9 steals, 2.6 assists. Last year, she averaged 22.8, 9.5. So her stats are up. Let's move on to Jackie Plum, who's scoring 18.7 points per game. Kelsey Plum, shooting 36% from the floor. Sorry for that. Kelsey Plum last year scored 18.7 points per game. Shot 39% from three, so she's shooting it worse. Field goal percentage, she's shooting at 36%, shot 47% last year. You look at Jackie Young. This year scoring, about 17 points per game. A Jackie Young last year that scored 17.6. So where's the problem? Number one, Plum and Young aren't shooting it as well from the floor as they did last year. But this is where it is, folks. Two names that are really important. One injured, one hurt. Simply put, they missed Chelsea Gray. Their all-star point guard. The Olympian. One of the people think that Caitlin Clark should be over. We already talked about this. a Chelsea Gray that averaged 15.3 points per game, 7.3 assists, probably the best pure lead guard in the league. And she can get you 20 if you need her to. She's also one of the top defenders in the league. So you don't have Chelsea Gray. But the one that people don't really realize they miss is Candace Parker. Now, Candace Parker only played 18 games last year before her season was cut short, getting 9.7.2 rebounds a game. But she was a veteran presence in the locker room, the one that kept them honest. They are missing some of the grit and the toughness of that team. It's very apparent. They're not the same team this year. You could say maybe it's a hunt. They're the hunted this year. Maybe so. But I think it's important to know that they will be better, but they're missing Chelsea Gray. They're not going to get Candace Parker back. And I think that's going to be an interesting point, is although she's the favorite running away to be the MVP because of the stats Asia Wilson is putting up, if they continue to struggle, be a 500 team, and they get Chelsea Gray back and they start ripping off games, does that hurt Asia Wilson's case for MVP? And does it hurt her case of best player in the world, even with those fantastic stats, when people say they missed their floor general? They missed the person at the front of their offense and the front of their defense. Brings a very interesting point with a very, very good team that is underperforming. But with Becky Hammon and Asia Wilson and Kelsey Plum and Jackie Young and hopefully Chelsea Gray, and then you could throw in, you know, some of the kids off the bench who's starting now, like Alicia Clark, who starts now, or Kate Martin, who is now into the starting lineup. Does that, when they get Chelsea back, can they make their run? Be interesting to see. WNBA is a lot more wide open with teams like the Liberty, the Sun, the Lynx, Seattle, which has been much improved with the additions of Awumake, Skylar Diggins-Smith, and even now, the Phoenix Mercury, with Kalia Copper in the lineup and Brittany Griner now back in the fold. It's going to be a fun time in the W. Let's end today's podcast by addressing the NBA draft. About three or so weeks ago, I came on this show and I told you that Zachary Richichet should have been and should be the number one pick. Now, I'm not saying I'm moving odds, but I'm saying you as a coach, I looked at the totality of the game and what was needed. And when I saw Atlanta get that first pick, I really started to think about who was going to be the better fit between Alex Saar and Richichet. Think about this. When the odds came out on BetMGM, Alexander Saar was a -2-1 favorite to become the number one pick. Richichet was +275. Donovan Clingan was at 22-1. Reed Shepard and Rob Dillingham were 25-1. Nikola Topic was at 20-1. Just these couple of guys. Think about this. Atlanta went to draft raw lottery. 1 week later, Saar is -300. Richichet is +425. Donovan Clingan is at 12-1. So now if we pull back up the odds, Saar is all the way down to -165. Richichet is +175. And Clingan is 6-1. Simply put, folks, there is no clear-cut number one guy in this draft. There's not a can't-miss prospect. So, folks, it's got to go with who is the best fit. And when you start thinking about fit, Saar does not fit. A Jaren Jackson clone, no offense to Double J, I love his game, does not fit what Atlanta needs. Atlanta needs one to go one or two directions. They need a new rim protecting big because they're poor defensively, or they need someone that could score the ball at the small forward position to allow them to trade DeAndre Hunter. So if they're going to trade DeAndre Hunter, that signs to me that Richey should be the pick to play along with Jalen Johnson in the front court with a Clint Capela. If they want to keep Hunter and keep Johnson and switch the center, I think Donovan Klingon is a better fit than Alexander Sarr. That is why we're seeing movement. If you ask me 3 weeks ago, I'm telling you, Zachary Richey should have been and should be the number one pick. I said it when he was plus 425. And then ESPN came out with their mock draft and they put Richey one and he started moving. And other people followed suit. He kept moving. Now he's still at a plus 175. I will say this. If I am the Atlanta Hawks and Landry Fields, I am taking Zachary Richey with the number one pick. So what I'm telling you is there is still value to go get Richey at the number one pick on BetMGM. I don't believe it's going to be Sarr. I never thought it was going to be Sarr. Sarr does not move the needle for me. Could he have a great NBA career? Sure he does. But Richey's ability to shoot the ball from deep and create off the bounce is today's modern NBA. Richey fits. And if I were the Atlanta Hawks, I would take Richey as the number one pick. And if I were you, I'd be betting on it before that line keeps moving down. And next thing you know, Richey could be the number one pick consensually across the board and could be a minus money favorite. If you like Richey, you may have missed the mark before. Don't miss it anymore. Go grab them and be the number one draft pick. This has been your Betting Above the Rim podcast for June 14th. For all things sports gambling, download that Sports Grid app. Pre-game, in-game, post-game, props, predictions, and more from the very best in the sports gambling industry. Next podcast would come next week. It's going to be one of two things. Are we crowning an NBA champion, or are we talking a game six? For my producer, Matty George, Vinny with the graphics, thank you for listening, folks. Remember, it's smarter to be on Sports Grid. Good night.